Welcome to the RUF SCAD podcast, where we explore the intersection between faith and creativity. And this month, we're sitting down with Joy Chamberlain, who is almost on the way out, just a few weeks away from graduation. But Joy, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How's your last quarter starting off?
Pretty good. I like all my professors. And I think I'm just going to enjoy the time I have left.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
Nice. So we have the wonderful benefit here of you're already in the midst of reflecting back on what your time at SCAD has meant and all the sort of important highlights and things like that. So I would love to hear, how did you even end up at SCAD in the first place?
Well, it's actually kind of an interesting story. When I was in high school, senior year, I was actually deciding whether or not I wanted to try to go into theater professionally or whether or not I wanted to take kind of the route of trying to find something with art. And I guess kind of the more like schools that I visited and the more that I kind of thought through these things, I like decided that, you know, that I didn't have a strong enough background in dance to go into theater professionally. And I was also concerned that it would kind of kill my love for it. So when I decided I wanted to go the route of art, and I was initially thinking I wanted to do like animation and storyboard art, because someone from my high school had, recently gotten into storyboard art and had gotten a job and, you know, was telling me about it. So I was like, oh yeah, that sounds like fun. That sounds good. My number one school was Ringling College of Art and Design. Sure. But it was funny because they got back to me and they had told me that I hadn't gotten into the animation program, but that they would love me to have me for the illustration program, which I think is funny looking back on it.
Yeah, exactly,
now.
Right.
But at the time, I was like, oh no, you know, that's not really what I want to do.
That's
and
funny.
Everything. So I better look for a different school. Which I think is funny. But, you know, then I found like SCAD and everything and found out that one of my cousins actually worked for the school and all these things.
Convenient.
So I was like, oh, that's cool. And just when I came and visited, I like fell in love with it. I was like, this is exactly where I think I need to go. Like, it just felt like a different environment than the other places. Mm-hmm. And I just really, I don't know, really like loved visiting here. So I was like, I need to go here.
What were some of the things that sold you on it?
I think the city of Savannah is
mm-hmm.
beautiful.
That's right.
It's a beautiful place to like live and work and have a college experience. I thought that it was really cool that the college, you know, didn't have a campus, that it was like the city was kind of the campus. And I thought that was really cool. And I also had a really good experience because I was able to sit in on a class when I visited. And it was like a sequential art class and everything. And, you know, the people there were like super nice and inviting to me. You know, some girl I didn't even know gave me candy because she was like, it's Valentine's Day or it's around Valentine's Day. Like, you should have some candy. I was okay.
Very trusting of you.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, but it was really cool. And the professors just all seemed really like nice. And I loved all the different buildings and how they displayed student art. So
was it like a culture shock coming from much farther away up north?
Yes, definitely. I remember, you know, my freshman year when I said, you know, something about the pop machine and somebody
Love
looked
it.
At me and was like, where are you from? Like, what do you mean pop
machine? That is
one
of those words where I have learned there's the biggest distinction in regional dialects. You can almost tell where somebody's from based on what they call it.
That's yeah, really definitely. Funny. It was funny.
So how did you get into illustration in the first place?
I took a class in animation my freshman year, and, you know, just from taking that class alone, and trying it out, I was like, you know, this, I don't think this is for me. I was like, I'm not enjoying doing my homework. I'm not enjoying the class. Like, I don't connect well with like the professor and everything. But just, you know, I just didn't, it was a lot more work on the computer than I thought it was going to be. And mm-hmm. it kind of sucked the creativity out of it for me, a little bit. And I know there's like so many talented animators, and there's not to say anything against
sure
any of that. It's just that, you know, I found when I took that class, I was like, I don't think this is the right route for me. And then I kind of, you know, was looking between sequential art and illustration, and just felt that like illustration was gonna be the right route for me. And also because I wasn't quite sure at that point, sophomore year, like what exactly I wanted to study or what exactly I wanted to do. And I felt that sequential art was a little too focused on certain industries, whereas illustration was a bit more broad. So yeah, I could kind of figure out what I wanted to do as I went along, I thought.
So how would you describe your illustration style? Is that a hard question?
Yeah, well, I think it's changed a bit. Because I started out doing like digital illustration a bit more, mm-hmm. But I really missed painting, and that's kind of what I found. So recently, my style is, you know, I will draw and then I'll paint with watercolors, kind of all the separate pieces of my illustration. And then I cut them out in Photoshop and kind of edit everything together. And then I light everything digitally. Kind of use both
really
things.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think I really like that because it, you know, it has that feeling of like traditional art for me. It helps me to get my creative juices out in that way. But then I can still use all of those cool digital tools that I think have come along with Photoshop and with editing and all of that stuff. And I think that it's been a really fun way for me to work.
That's really cool. So what would you say early on were some influences, maybe not even necessarily particular people, although I guess it could be, but what were some of the things that really helped you gravitate towards art or illustration maybe specifically?
Yeah, I always really enjoyed art. And I remember, you know, when I was younger, I would do a lot of art with my dad. Like we would do, you know, those like paint by number things together, mm-hmm. or like other stuff. And that was always really fun for me, and I loved it. And both of my grandmothers love painting. And so, you know, I would always paint with them when I went to their house too. And so I really enjoyed it, and I felt like, you know, I was good at it. So I would always kind of gravitate towards doing art in elementary school and kind of on through middle school and high school. But I didn't really decide that was something that I was considering as a career path until like senior year of high school.
And so what changed senior year?
Yeah, I think like initially I wasn't sure if I wanted to do teaching or not. And I was trying to think about that. But I kind of decided, you know, that I really wanted to try to pursue art. And I had a really good art teacher, too, who encouraged me in that way. And so that's kind of what set me on that path.
That's really cool. I love when people, as they're thinking back on why they got into art or whatever it is they're passionate about, I love when that answer involves family or people that they're close to. Because it's like this collective thing that as a family, you guys or we can sit down and do and enjoy. And even as you get older, there's this like shared meaning and significance of something that we can all gather around and do. I feel like I've started to grasp the beauty on the other side of that now with Wade. Almost, mm-hmm. He's like old enough to kind of start to sort of enjoy things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of it is he actually enjoys the thing or he just likes to see me excited about it. And even if they're silly things, just for him to smile at a thing that I like too, mm-hmm. And to try to cultivate that, that's really cool. Were there like particular either books or artists as you progressed in your enjoyment of it or just any kind of illustration, visual art that you like really connected with?
Yeah. You know, I always really loved, like children's illustrated books or like graphic novels or things of that sort. I remember one that I was particularly like enthralled with, which is actually a very different style from my own, but that I just thought, you know, oh, this is awesome. Was actually some work done by Brian Selznick. And he made these books that, they weren't like necessarily graphic novels, but they were for like middle school aged reading or so. And you know, almost the entire book was told through like very detailed pencil drawings. And there was only like, you know, there was only maybe about a fourth of the book that did have like some words to further explain the story.
That's impressive.
And I thought that was the coolest thing. I was like, this is awesome. This is an awesome way to tell a story.
That's really cool. So it was just image for the most, I mean, some words, just but
images
just, wow,
for the most part.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it was called The Invention of Hugo Cabret. And okay, it was really cool. It had this like animatronic thing was like drew this different stuff, and they were trying to figure out like if it was going to write something or like how to make it work, and he had to fix it. And it was, and then there was all this stuff with like his father who was a clockmaker, and it was a really cool story.
The more I think about that, the more impressive it is that somebody can do that.
Yeah, it was so impressive that he was able to like communicate these really kind of complex ideas and story elements just through like pictures alone, that he had drawn. And I was like, this is awesome.
That's cool.
So that was, I remember that particularly. He also has another book called Wonderstruck that I read a little bit later, but I just remember reading The Invention of Hugo Cabret again and again. I don't know if you can qualify that, but
that's so cool. I feel like most creative people, I can think about this for myself too, there's a moment in your growth of enjoyment, but also as you're starting to think about what does it look like for me to create this kind of thing, there's a moment where you come across some piece and the response is, I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know that could be done.
Yeah.
I think about that for me with music and some of the, there's really one album in particular, and I heard it for the first time and it just changed everything. The next day it was like, I didn't know you could do that with music. Like these turning points of the horizons expanding of what's actually possible with the medium. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you ended up at SCAD, a little bit of a culture shock, getting acclimated in a new city and a new part of the country. For some people, that newness and culture shock can be really life-giving. You know, new place, new people, we're all celebrating this good thing. For some, it can be really challenging. Mm-hmm. Like, I was the creative person in my high school, and now that's everybody, and I don't know who I am. What was that transition like for you?
You know, it was hard, honestly. I mean, I remember enjoying all of my classes freshman year and everything, but I had a really hard time initially, and still sometimes struggle with, you know, comparing my work to other people. And I think that was really easy to do, I guess, being surrounded by so many creative people. Mm-hmm. It was both like inspiring at the same time to and be, oh, this is super cool to learn alongside people who love all the same things I do, but like it was difficult too, because I mean, especially for critique days, because you had to put your work like up on the wall directly against everybody else's, and you could really
very on the
see
nose, yeah, sure,
how everybody did their work differently. I think my perception of that has changed a lot, especially this year. But that was initially a really big challenge that I had to overcome, was kind of that perfectionism that kept creeping into my work.
So how did it start to change?
You know, I think this year I just decided, you know, like, you know, I want to enjoy this. And part of the reason why I picked art over theater was so that I wouldn't kill my enjoyment of the thing, you know? And I was like, and I feel like I'm not enjoying this, so I need to change something about the way that I'm doing it so that I like what I'm doing And then hopefully other people like it too. And if they don't, you know, at least I like what I did. And so I think that's what kind of, you know, drew me back into, you know, painting and all of those things. And I also just tried to intentionally reform the way I was thinking about everything.
That's really interesting. So it wasn't even just an internal shift in the way that you thought about it, but it sounds like that actually led to you changing the type of thing that you did. Like, how can I differentiate a little bit, or how can I do a thing that I enjoy enough to let me implement this new way I'm approaching it? That's really helpful. Yeah. That's actually really cool too, because it changed the way that you thought about what you wanted to make.
Yeah, because I think with part of the reason why I actually turned to watercolor rather than digital art was because watercolor was actually a medium I had never worked in before.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting.
Like, you know, this is a challenge. This is a new challenge. So I can just focus more on learning it than on how I'm doing it. And kind of focus on the improvement aspect of it. But also what I really liked about it was actually, you know, how unforgiving of a medium it
That's
is.
That's cool.
Because, you know, you have to create it in a certain time. And like once it dries and once you go back to it, you can only work on it to a certain amount or else you risk overworking it.
Wow, that's great. That's so helpful too.
Which is really helpful and really helped me kind of break out of that perfectionism a little bit, because I think what I struggled with digital art is just, you know, that there was always, you could hit Command Z and you could keep just undoing every single thing that you did. And I would kind of just get into this process of like really self-editing my work before it was even done. Like I would just keep trying to like fix it. And like, you know, I needed to just let myself draw the thing, let myself make those mistakes and then fix it rather than keep trying to fix it as I was going. And I think kind of getting myself out of that, my work's like actually a lot better now. And I'm still able to kind of edit out the things that I don't like about it afterwards by bringing it into Photoshop and stuff anyways. So if I need to, like, if I smudged something, if I messed up on a section, I can still kind of like just edit it out or whatever after the fact. So it took away like the nerves of I'm gonna mess this up, but it also was, you know, gave me more freedom to just create, because, you know, I wasn't gonna keep editing my work before it was done.
That's such a helpful process. Anybody that's ever heard me talk about this knows I'm such a big fan of self-imposed limitations. I think they're one of the most helpful things you can do. What that makes me think of, I started doing this in my own recording, because you can do the same thing in audio production. You know, you have your effects bin and all of the different things that you've done to change this sound that you've recorded. And you could just ad nauseum go in and edit and tweak. Mm-hmm. And eventually what I started doing is when I would get it to a certain point, I would just bounce it down, which is basically the same thing you're saying with watercolor. It's like it's there and you actually can't undo anymore. Like that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And once I got to a point where I could do that, it was easier to progress and start doing things, because I wasn't just hyper-focused on every single detail.
Yeah.
You actually lose the big picture when you hyper-focus on details.
Yeah.
They're important, but they're only important insofar as they're serving the big picture.
Yeah.
That's so cool how that realization led you to shift the way that you created. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about like the technicalities of some of the forms and mediums. I would love to hear you talk about the power of visual art and illustration. You know, I don't think somebody like you comes to a school like Scott and devotes as much as you've done if there's not some kind of magic behind it. So for you, what's the power and beauty behind illustration? Like, what do you see its potential as?
Well, I feel like you can, you know, you can say a lot of powerful things with a picture that I feel like can't always be said with words. And I feel like you can really communicate ideas just using images. Like I said in that, you know, in some of the work of Brian Selznick that I saw, that he could kind of communicate that. And I feel like, you know, it can speak to a lot of different things. And I think that's really awesome. But that there's also just a lot of beauty in the things that we can create. And something that I've really learned to appreciate that's also kind of helped me get out of comparing my work with other people is just kind of enjoying the work of other people and saying, wow, how cool is it that everybody creates their art in a little different style and how everybody sees a little different piece of the world and that's kind of how they communicate it. And I think that's something that has become a lot more beautiful to me, and that I've started to, you know, appreciate then my own work and other people's work more by kind of getting out of that mindset of, you know, oh, there's this better than mine. Mine is better than this person's, whatever. Because I think, you know, I think there's something like that can be really cool about how everybody uniquely creates.
I can't help but appreciate the irony. We were talking about this earlier, how we're set up recorded here at Christ the King on the communion table, because it's the only table in the room. And I like what you said earlier, that it's not that words are bad or insufficient, but sometimes images can just do a thing that words can't do. And I appreciate the irony of us sitting here at a communion table, because I think there's something of the Christian life and God's understanding of what it's like to be a person that takes that into account.
Yeah.
You know, in our tradition, we're definitely word people. We believe that the written word is authoritative and inspired. But God also gives us kind of the visual word, if you want to call it that, with the sacraments, with baptism and communion. These things that, it's not that words are bad or that the scripture is insufficient, but these things that actually visualize into reality that we can see and look at and hold and experience in that way, the reality that's true in a unique way. And it's cool just to have that lens. And I love that you keep going back to that same piece of how illustration can be a method of storytelling that just does something different than words by themselves can do. And it also allows, and I guess you can do this with written word too, but not only is there that category, but you can explore that in so many different ways. And you can see somebody's own personal style and how they approach something. That's really cool. All right. Speaking of the way that Christianity talks about a lot of these things, how'd you get involved in RUF in the first place? What was the entrance point for you?
Well, coming here because my faith is and, you know, has been really important to me. So, you know, I knew I wanted to plug into like a church, a community, and a campus ministry, like kind of as soon as I got here. So one of the things that, you know, actually helped me decide on SCAD rather than other places was I was like, well, do they have a campus ministry? So I looked that up ahead of time before I came. And I saw RUF and then I think maybe like one other one. And I was like, oh, okay. So there's like, there's an option at least. And I was like, if it's not great, you know, at least I can plug into like a Bible study or something through my church. But I was, you know, I was hoping that it would go well. So I kind of knew, I don't know, before I came here that I would want to come to a campus ministry. And so, you know, I found RUF and like just really enjoyed it since.
A question I think a lot of people would have, and one that I'm interested in too. And at a certain point, you know, we concede some of this, a lot of this is the work of God's Spirit. But the question is, what do you think is the difference between the person who shows up and maybe faith kind of fizzles off into the background versus the person who shows up and experiences all the very real challenges that you just mentioned about being in a new place with people who have very different ways of understanding the world, but then being in that setting and it fosters like real growth as a Christian. What do you think the difference is? In other words, how does somebody show up and actually in that setting not just maintain their faith, but actually grow compared to the person that maybe their faith just kind of fizzles out?
Yeah, I think, I think a lot of it has to be intentional, kind of. And I know it was that way for me. There were definitely a lot of challenges I encountered by coming here. And I think just but that those challenges did grow me in a really unique way. And I think my faith is so much different and better for it, for coming here, because of working through those challenges.
That's a really helpful answer. You know, part of how Jesus presents a vision for the Christian life that I think we can sometimes miss in different pockets of America, and we're blessed to have the religious liberties that we have, is that we should expect some degree of challenge in the Christian life. We should expect that people will look at us and not necessarily understand why we think what we think or why we do what we do. And my suspicion is it's hard to go through SCAD 4 years and not have some degree of that. But I think intentionality is a really good word. To be able to anticipate that and not be surprised by it, and to not let it deter us, but to actually go back to the places where God promises to solidify and strengthen and grow our faith. Yeah, it can be done. That's the good news, right? Like, you're sort of evidence of that. It can be done. You mentioned earlier that part of what that looked like for you was thinking about not having one foot in creativity and one foot in Christianity, but having these two things work alongside of one another. What did that look like for you when you were here? Like, how those two things served one another?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was really helpful. I felt that I, you know, was able to kind of rely on God throughout my time here at SCAD. And I say that because, you know, I would get so into this perfectionistic mindset, so into comparing my work with other people, that, you know, sometimes Christianity and relying on God, like, sometimes that was able to kind of take me out of that, by remembering that, you know, what other people think of my work or what other people think of me doesn't need to define me. That, you know, what God thinks of me is what should define me. And that's, you know, definitely something that I didn't, like, remember all the time or remind myself of all the time. But it was a helpful thing, I think, kind of having one foot in this and one foot in the other. And sometimes, you know, it was, you know, difficult because those things kind of almost seemed to clash a little bit. But I think that, you know, for the most part, it was actually like a really helpful thing.
You know, one of the things that I often think about with creativity that makes good creativity what it is when there's consistency or cohesion between what a thing is about and how it tells the thing that it's about. And for a lot of people, you know, I think about illustration and particularly children's books and that kind of thing, where there's this very elegant simplicity and kind of a joyfulness and a lightheartedness and kind of a fun expression of good things. And what would it say about a person that's just driving themselves into the ground to make that kind of thing and the disconnect that will be true of that? And what you're saying is Christianity allows you to actually still enjoy something like that. Which means there's going to be a lot of consistency. If you're making these very good, rich, beautiful, simple things and telling these very concise, illuminated stories, and you're doing it in a way where you can actually step back and rest from it, it seems inevitable that that's going to show through in the story that you're telling and in the images that you're creating in a way that will actually help you but help the thing that you're creating too. Man, that's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Definitely. I think refinding my enjoyment in illustration and my enjoyment in art has, you know, enabled my work to still have some of that, you know, like, joyful, more like happy motifs. I don't know. It just, you know, it made my work better at the end of the day.
It can be like, you can have both too. Like, you can step back from it and enjoy it, and it can actually still make what you're doing better. That's really cool. All right. So the big news that we have already unveiled in RUF, but we'll make it official, etched into the podcast now, is that your time with RUF is not coming to a close in the next few weeks, because you're going to stay with RUF as an intern, going to Sanford in Birmingham, Alabama. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you start to think about the internship? And maybe more importantly, how did you decide that that's what you wanted to do post-college?
Yeah, definitely. I'll try to keep it short, but we'll kind of see.
Big question. That's fair.
Yeah. But, you know, I think like RUF, it's meant so much to me over these past 4 years, and having that community behind me and having that space to kind of grow in my faith has been super helpful. And, you know, I really just wanted to step into a role where I could, you know, help other students, in the way that, you know, my interns and, my, you know, campus minister and my peers, were really able to help me to grow and to, you know, be able to feel free to be myself and everything. And it's something that was kind of on my mind, a little bit since freshman year. A lot, I'd been thinking about it a lot more, last year and this year. And just, you know, I remember I was having a conversation with, Elise from my PC, and it was my sophomore year, and I was just talking about some different things, talking about, you know, leading small group and some different things and my perspective on, you know, some disagreement I had with friends or whatever. And, you know, she just kind of, you know, stops and said to me, you know, like, have you ever thought about being an RUF intern? And I was like, what? Like, this isn't what we're talking about. I was like, this is kind of random. But, you know, she was like, you know, I just think you'd be really good at it. And she said, you know, I think you have a really good perspective on all these different things and just the way that you interact with people and the way that you interact with your friends. I think you'd be really good at that if you decide to do that. And I was like, oh, okay. And that kind of got me thinking about it a little bit more. And I feel like the more that I kind of have thought about it, I've been just decided that, you know, I think that, you know, God's given me some gifts of empathy and of being able to listen to people well, that I think will really help me in this process. And that I've really wanted to step into a role where I can serve God and serve people, and to love people well. I think RUF has meant a lot to me, and I'm really excited to be able to step into this new role.
We're super excited that you're doing it. Yeah. I get this question a lot from people. What are your goals for the next, you know, however long of RUF? What do you want to see when you're in RUF? And my answer to this question often is probably a somewhat unglamorous one, because what I say is when we think about ministry in RUF, we're not really just thinking about the next year. I mean, we are, but we're not just thinking about the next year. And we're not even really thinking about somebody's 4 years in RUF. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the next 10 to 20 plus. You know, what is the future of the church going to look like? Are we preparing people well to go serve the local church, even if it's not in vocational ministry, with whatever they decide to do? And what's so beautiful about your staying on with RUF, you know, we were even talking earlier about you're going to Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was reminded of is, oh, Elizabeth's campus minister, Jason Sterling, when she was in RUF at Ole Miss, you know, almost, I guess, 10 years ago, was super impactful for her. And now you're going to a city where he's pastoring a church. And you just see this connectivity of how people are shaped in the church, and then they go out to impact others in the same way that they were shaped. Mm-hmm. And it's just really cool to see God's very simple, patient, faithful work through his people, even in a ministry like RUF, where what we're doing isn't glamorous and it's not reinventive. We're just doing very simple things that we believe God calls us to do, because we actually believe, and you're testament to this, that those are the means through which God works. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We're so excited that you're going to be sticking around. What would you say that you're most excited about for the internship?
You know, I think I'm really most excited to, you know, get to know all the students and to really connect with everyone there. I love talking to people, and I love, just being there for people and encouraging people. And I think that, you know, I'm really excited to meet with students one-on-one a couple times throughout the week. And I'm also excited to go to a new place and have new experiences and meet new people. I think, you know, I've been able to really get to know a lot of people here in the last 4 years, and tried to help, you know, serve and be there for other people, in the best way that I can. And I think, you know, I'll be able to step into that again, but, you know, a lot more so.
Sure.
Because I'll have more time devoted to that, which will be really good.
That's great.
But yeah, I'm really excited about everything about it, honestly. But
that's
great.
All right. What would you say then that you're most either nervous or apprehensive about?
You know, I think I'm a little bit nervous about, even though I'm really excited to go to a new place, I love meeting new people. I love making new friends. I think I'm a little bit nervous about making new friends my own age. And just, you know, I guess, like not throwing myself so full force into the internship and into like helping and serving others that I kind of, you know, forget about taking care of myself in the process.
Sure. Yeah. You know, that is, I think if you were to talk to most interns, they would say that's probably the hardest part. Because when you come to college, it's still really hard. You're in a new place with new people, but the way that you connect is kind of clearly delineated. You know, you're spending most of your time with people in class in the dorms, and those are also your peers. And those are the most obvious sources to try to make friends. With the internship, that gets a little bit muddied because, you know, you're right out of college and the people that you're spending a large chunk of time with are in college. But now suddenly there's this disparity. Like, you're not really their peer anymore, which means, like, you're not, I mean, there's a friend component, but it's different than when you show up freshman year. So being in this new place where all of a sudden the places that you make friends and connect, it just looks a little more complex. It can be really challenging, and it actually can be really lonely. No, which isn't to say that it's impossible to make friends, but it certainly can be challenging. That's definitely legitimate. So what's next then, right? You got a couple more months here at SCAD, and then, you know, you'll go on staff, I guess, June, which is not that far out. What's going on between now and then? What are you excited about this quarter? What are you trying to get wrapped up? What's next?
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm excited to just really enjoy my end of my time here, enjoy my last quarter. And I want to make sure that I'm taking time to spend time with other people, and to spend time with these friends who I, you know, likely won't see again very often for a while. And I think that's something that I'm trying to remember in the midst of all the busyness. But I also want to just, you know, wrap up my portfolio and my illustration work well, without like stressing out about it too much and just trying to kind of enjoy it. And then I'll be, you know, starting to fundraise and starting to like prepare more for the RUF internship and kind of do all of the things that I'll need to be doing to prepare for that.
See, this is the answer everybody needs to hear. I've never heard anybody in their last quarter say, I really want to start kind of pushing people to the side and pulling more all-nighters so I can like perfect my work and have it be totally flawless. Nobody ever says that. People almost across the board say what you just said, which is the right answer, by the way. I really want to celebrate people in a place before I leave. I'm glad you said that. That's awesome. Are you apprehensive about fundraising, or are you more excited about it?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit nervous about it. I do think, you know, at the end of the day that God is going to help provide, and that, just to try to trust him in that. But I think it's something I am nervous about, just reaching out to people in that way and everything. But yeah.
I know it's like, it can sound like a cop out or a cliche, And I guess cliches become cliches because they're actually kind of true to say to trust that God's going to provide for that. But I have found in my experience in watching so many others in fundraising that happens truly in very unexpected ways that are super encouraging. I mean, that's been mm-hmm. the case for me with fundraising in ways mm-hmm. that I would have never anticipated in God's provision. And seeing so many campus ministers and interns kind of look around and say, I really don't know how this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And then just these incredible stories in totally unexpected places of how God provided in ways that really were extraordinary. And it's true. Like, if he wants somebody there, he will provide the means for that to happen. And we really can rest in that. I don't think anybody gets excited about fundraising, but there are parts of it. This is what I didn't really understand about it until I started doing it. There are parts of it that actually can be super encouraging, not just as an individual, but the way that you get to connect with people in a shared vision for a ministry who really are invested in the work of kingdom building on the college campus. And that's a really special mm-hmm. thing to get to be a part of with other people. So at the end of the day, if somebody said, Martin, if you don't want to fundraise anymore, would you take that route? I probably would take that route. Mm-hmm. But it's actually been a blessing in ways that I would have not really considered previously. So,
yeah.
But it's scary. That's fair. Definitely. Yeah. Okay. So as your time wraps up in Savannah, what are the places? I don't want to say what are you going to miss most, because everybody always says the people, which again is the right answer. What mm-hmm. are the places and things in Savannah that you're going to miss most?
I mean, a big thing for me is actually the trees here.
Yeah.
I love the trees
I
and the
that,
Spanish
sure.
moss
yeah.
and everything.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful. I'm definitely going to miss Forsyth Park a lot. Because yeah, I have so many memories at that place and it's beautiful. And I think I'm going to miss like the downtown and the historical buildings and all of that. A lot, just kind of, you know, not driving down the same streets, not like walking to the same places, because I'll be in a different place. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'll miss a lot of an aspect of that for sure. But yeah, I think honestly, just yeah, like the trees in the world around me, because I feel like it's a city, and yet it's such a beautiful city.
It is,
and
it
I
really
feel
is.
Like that's really unique, because
yes.
most cities I go to, you know, like, there's hardly any trees and there's like not a lot of, I don't know, it just sometimes can feel a bit more, it doesn't have the same feel that Savannah
yeah.
has.
Yeah. People pay a lot of money to come to Savannah for a few days and we wake yeah. up with it in our backyard, especially springtime yeah. on a day like today.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even, I was saying this earlier, it doesn't even feel like this should be a real place.
Yeah.
Okay. So restaurant and or coffee shop that you're going to miss the most?
Coffee shop, definitely Foxy Loxy.
Yeah.
That's the best place. I love sitting outside in the courtyard there and painting.
Yeah.
I'll like bring my watercolors and everything and get a good coffee. And it's like, it's
can't
the best.
Be, I'm here to tell you.
Can't go wrong. And then restaurant. Probably the Vault.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever been there before.
I thought for sure you were going to say Sputnik.
Oh, I also love Sputnik.
I didn't mean to derail your answer. Yes, the Vault. That's a good answer, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably a tie between those two, honestly.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't know. The Vault is my favorite in terms of, like, food.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say Sputnik is definitely my favorite in terms of, like, memories. Because,
okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and I love the potatoes there too. But like, I think, you know, just that there's been so many times where I've gotten like late night Sputnik with someone,
right.
or you know, had a whole group together and we'd all go to Sputnik. So I feel like the whole community aspect around Sputnik definitely. But I do really love the food at the Vault.
That makes sense. You can kind of get a potato anywhere. That makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah, the Vault's a fun place too. Really cool atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Good location. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, my last question to you. Anybody that knows you, definitely, like, the first word that comes to mind, probably, like, friendly, kind, empathetic, all absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to try to nuance people's understanding of you, like, what's something that you would want people to know about Joy that may not be as apparent on the surface?
I had to think about it. I don't know, actually.
You thought we were wrapping up with like the really simple, fun stuff, but now we're getting to the real stuff.
It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie. I don't know.
Just in case you thought you had Joy understood, you didn't, apparently. So that's a wonderful answer. Joy, truly, we are so grateful for you and your time here and all that you've meant to us in RUF. So normally I would say we're going to be sad to see you go, but that is not the case this time. So we will save all the sentimentality. Instead, we'll say we are so excited to see that the work or to see the work that God's going to do through you and in you as you continue your time with RUF in Birmingham. So for Joy's last time, the RUF SCAD podcast, and we'll see you next time.